Yeah, you need to build that trust there, because that's a different relationship you are engaging yourself with a customer. So it's not a transactional, you know, we do the service or the break fix and see you next time, into more, you know, relationship building and you know, a different partnership. And there needs to be trust if you go that direction, that you together can do something, because it's never you know, something that we can do on our own. Maybe we need stakeholder A or stakeholder B to work with us to change something in there. And yeah, it's a different type of service that we need to offer, and also a different way of engaging with the customer.
Hello, welcome to the Unscripted Podcast, where you'll find discussions on what matters most in service, leadership, and business transformation. I'm your host, Sarah Nicastro. Let's jump in. Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Nicastro. Today, we're joined by a service leader who has been in the business for 24 years, and we're going to talk about some of the things that he's seen in that time, what that means in terms of what today's landscape looks like, and also what the future might hold. So welcome to the podcast, Ralph Boots, who is Philips Services and Solution Delivery Lead for International Markets. Ralph, welcome and thanks for joining.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. So before we get into the conversation, just tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, your background, anything you want to share.
Yeah, my name is Ralph Boots. I'm Dutch, living in the Netherlands, working for Philips. 24 years. Before that, I worked in supply chain and in smaller companies, and I have a master in supply chain. Now, the role is service delivery, you know, and solution delivery in the international region. So those are all the markets besides China and North America. And we are mainly in the healthcare sector, so servicing, you know, hospital and hospital equipment, and do that as service. So there's a selling part and there's a delivery part. So that's a little bit about myself.
Yeah, excellent. So I always say, when I have folks join that have been with a company for, you know, 15, 20, 25 years, it's interesting because today you don't always see that, right? And I think it's always indicative of usually a good company culture and a place where, you know, you've felt you can thrive. Otherwise, you may not have been there for 24 years. And also, usually, it's if you look through people's progressions, you know, they've had an opportunity to continue to learn and develop and grow within that business, right? Otherwise, again, people might not stay put for that amount of time. So, that being said, 24 years at Philips is a major accomplishment. I have to imagine you've learned a lot, and the service landscape has changed tremendously in that amount of time. So, can you share some observations of just, you know, the evolution of service over your career at Philips, and, you know, anything that you take note that stands out to you over that time frame?
Yeah, I never thought about that in that way, but in that sense, it was never a boring place. So always something new to, you know, innovate or put your hands on and make things better. 24 years at Philips, of course, always in the healthcare industry. And if you see the healthcare industry changed over that period, and of course we changed with that. Now, in the past, we were kind of pioneers with a few other companies in, you know, medical devices to put them out there. And these were high tech, you know, complex machines in a healthcare environment. So, you know, service was a sort of a given that people needed to do service. And at the time, it was easier, if you will. And I remember the days when I started, we did three big things a year. So these are the top priorities, these three. And, you know, we nailed them and we improved and we did that year after year. Now, you know, 24 years forward, it seems like we have so many priorities and the healthcare industry is much more professional than it was at that time, moved around, including new competition, more demanding customers, you know, more pressure on the whole healthcare system. So which that pressure comes also into our company where we need to deliver and step up the plate. So from, you know, break fix 24 years ago to, you know, still break fix, but then with more digitalization and more professional services is a fast track, you know, putting things forward. Still with all the time, you know, better improvements, and we still have a way to go, but there's still opportunities to increase the business and increase even our profits and to reinvest in better healthcare.
Yeah. You know, you said, I've never thought of it that way looking back. And I think sometimes that's a factor of a type of person who spends less time retrospective and more time just what's next, right? Which is something I can identify with. So what you were saying about, you know, the three priorities each year and how that's shifted to today's landscape, you know, it's an illustration of, and maybe interesting to reflect in that way, of just how complex things have gotten, right? So it's, you know, the amount of information, the amount of demands, the amount of possibilities, you know, a lot of those things are great, but it's just the pace of information, the pace of change, you know, it's just very complex today. And so obviously organizations like Philips have to figure out how to contend with that and how to simplify as much of that complexity as you can for your customers, right? Because often that's what they're looking for you to do.
Maybe one additional thing is that in the past, service was these guys from service, you know, somehow in a corner, and I'm saying guys, because at the time it was pretty male-oriented, you know, these guys in the corner. You know, well, now service is kind of, you know, hot, and it's a differentiator. So that gives also the pressure of, you know, more stakeholders to manage in a way, and more, yeah, pressure, you know, because service is a differentiator. And in the past, it was kind of a more hygiene factor. So that makes also a huge difference in the positioning where you are in the organization.
Yeah, no, that's
I'm
a really good
female.
Point. Yeah, yeah. Female. You know, slowly but surely, we're working on it. Yeah. So, you know, that's a good point, is as service has become a differentiator, you know, it does put more pressure on the frontline talent, on the business, on delivery, execution, all of those things, right? It's not this, as you said, it was sort of a given, but it was a given in a way where it was just there in the background. It happened when it needed to, but there wasn't a lot of emphasis put on it. And that has changed, which is really exciting, but also, to your point, brings a lot of pressure with it. So when you think about where we are today and what today's landscape looks like, can you comment on sort of two things? And they may be different sides of the same coin, or they might be some different points, but what do you see as the biggest challenges and the biggest opportunities?
The things that stay the same, and that's still the biggest challenge, is our people. And service is a people business. So how do we keep the people? Keep the people, you know, motivated, and keep the people customer-centric. I think that is still the biggest challenge, you know, where we need to manage. Now, besides managing customer demand, that is much more challenging. So I would say customers, people, and then internally, you know, to, based on what I said earlier, is to align all these stakeholders and manage them too, and still get the right attention in the company to do things like remote investment, you know, like training capacity, etc., to make sure we keep, you know, running the business as such. So I would describe them in these three buckets as the biggest areas or the biggest things where we are working on.
Now, what about the other side of that? So like, what do you see as the biggest opportunities?
Yes, in our case, it's still drive productivity with remote, and work with customers on more data-driven insights and services to enhance their operation. So basically get closer to the customers in just doing a service. You can buy our service, here you are, in more output-driven services. So we get closer to our customers and understanding their pain points and see how we could develop services to help with that. And then internally, it's more this switch to, you know, the more proactive remote, where we learn to trust these the signals and act upon that and get better at that.
Yeah. I like that you bring up the people part. That's kind of what I've in many ways built a career talking about, because it's almost always the answer to what's the hardest piece or what's the most challenging piece. You know, there's a lot of headlines that get given to the technology, but that's never really the sticking point. You know, the sticking point with it is how it's put in place and how people feel about it and, you know, that sort of piece, not necessarily those pieces themselves. And I think there's a lot to what you're saying with the people part that has come into play. You know, it's, you know, you mentioned how do you keep your people customer centric? How do you keep them engaged? But also, as service has become more of a differentiator, the expectations we have of the people and what we need to look for in the people has also shifted a bit, right? So it's, you know, there's a lot of layers to that piece of the conversation. Also, you know, getting closer to the customer, understanding their business in a way that you can develop new service offerings that are appealing to them. Sounds very simple, right? To just say in a conversation, but I mean, you know, that actually doing that, building the skills to do that, building the relationships to do that, taking that insight and taking it back into the business and innovating with it. I mean, there's a whole lot that goes into that. So,
yeah. No, and especially, you know, that, you know, what does the engineer or the field service engineer of the future look like? Yeah, and technology plays a big part of that. And yeah, you can dream about, you know, the Google Glasses and all these features that come in, or artificial intelligence and AI, you know. But at the essence, it's still people business. Huh? People do, you know, business with people. So how do we train, you know, our engineers to that? And are all these people like that? I mean, some people like, you know, give me a complex issue, fix it, and I'm moving out. Now with the digitalization, the information that we have. So yeah, we see also generation split in sort of engineers, the new generation coming in and the older generation, and yeah, how to deal with that. Yeah, we got a lot of engineers still in our company. And that is basically part of our product that we sell as service.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk a little bit more about the transition to, you know, more data-driven outcomes, the digitalization of service? What are, you know, the things that you're doing today to look for how to create those new value streams, to look for ways to use service to contribute, you know, new revenue streams, et cetera?
Yeah, and there's not a one-size-fits-all. Huh? If you think about our customer base, they have different needs. Think about it, you know, a university hospital versus private government hospital. So there are different ways of working and different needs. The trick is more to connect to what are they looking for? What is their improvement? So where are their pain points, or where are their opportunities? And connect our services towards that. So if you have university hospital, maybe they just want, you know, very good quality pictures and not looking for throughput. And another hospital having waiting lists and they looking for throughput. So then the throughput KPI is something that we can work on. So okay, how can we help you to, you know, scan more patients with the same quality, with less dose, or, you know, something like that as an example. So it's basically around cost, speed and quality, where we try to develop services and link them to customer needs. That is the transition we are making. But not every hospital is open for our customers or open for that. But, you know, there we see kind of a trend moving into output-driven KPIs and services, and put some skin in the game for ourselves to say, hey, we can help you with that. Let's take that risk or that opportunity together. But that's a new area which you need to define the rules of the games, yeah, in terms of how we do things, how we make those agreements, and measure the success. Yeah, you need to build that trust there, because that's a different relationship you are engaging yourself with a customer. So it's not a transactional, you know, we do the service or the break fix and see you next time, into more, you know, relationship building and, you know, a different partnership. And there needs to be trust if you go that direction. that you together can do something, because it's never you know, something that we can do on our own. Maybe we need stakeholder A or stakeholder B to work with us to change something in there. And yeah, it's a different type of service that we need to offer, and also a different way of engaging with the customer.
Now, it's interesting you bring up trust. Incredibly important. I think also, though, what I wanted to talk about next, and it's a good segue into that, is the role of trust among your teams and as a leader, right? So this whole evolution of service and, you know, where the business is headed really requires not only engaged, but empowered, you know, team members and strong change leadership, change management, right? It's this, you know, we talked earlier about the complexity. That complexity means that we're almost always today in a state of change. You know, we're continually improving, we're continually evolving. And while that's good in many ways, and also just is what it is, you know, there's no escaping it. If you don't have that good cultural foundation, you don't have strong leadership, it can really fall apart internally, right? So can you talk a little bit about company culture, empowerment, leadership, and how that comes into play with keeping everyone on board with where things are going?
Yeah, and culture is important, and we take that very seriously because we are in a healthcare environment. So we, you know, want to drive patient safety and quality and all of that. And we're proud that we can contribute to, you know, that healthcare industry. But then on the flip side, yeah, how do you, and we have, you know, many thousand engineers. So how do we make sure that we, you know, drive that culture down to them? Because these are the people that are most of the time with the customer. It's not the account manager, it's the service person that is, you know, all the time in front of the customer, you know, representing the company. So how do we engage with them to convey that culture and that trust? And yeah, we have different programs in going to that culture and these culture elements and these behaviors and what we want to do. So yeah, we're pretty strong on that. And of course, we got a great history as a 130-year-old company. But you need to reinvent yourself all the time in that one and yeah, drive that culture too. So it's also dealing with the world is different cultures. So you get your Philips culture that we have, you know, company culture, but then you need to mingle that with the local culture. Now, that's an interesting mix that we need to stitch together. And then the local people need to drive that, you know, towards engineers. But yeah, are we listening to them? Are we taking their concerns seriously? Are we equipping them with the right things? And, you know, how do we also, yeah, in a way, drive that whole Philips culture for what do we want to be and how do we, you know, kind of work together to solve issues, teaming up, etc. So we got a whole booklet and trainings and all of that, but at the end comes also down in how the local managers in the different markets are, you know, kind of conveying that and work with their teams and also show what we say that that is true, because the yeah, if the first occasion comes and, you know, we throw all these things out of the window and just go to the old ways of working or whatever we can do to stress out people.
Yeah, if your booklet is just a booklet that somebody reads and then their experience is completely different from that, you know, it means nothing, yeah. Right? It's, yeah, the execution of that and how the managers show up day after day. And that's how, you know, going back to the point of trust, that's how that trust gets built. It's important to have those philosophies as a company, but then the trust comes into how are they displayed day in and day out. And
yeah, we have these metrics that we measure, employee engagement survey, and a lot of them are also linked to that culture. Now, to measure that and to react on that. And of course, the fields people are the biggest population. So we take that seriously and see, okay, what are those people telling us and what do we need to do different? Although I got still, you know, great ideas and things that we didn't implement that we still need to do. And it's also our duty to make sure that these people, the field people, the service people, are being seen in the company. Mm-hmm. Because typically the sales guy get the, you know, the big trophy, and you know, this mm-hmm. is the biggest guy. But you know, the people in front of the customer, that that helping the customer, those are also the heroes in there. And I say it wrong. It should not be hero. It should be consistent, really. But people that do a good job in front of the customer time after time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that recognition is very, very important. So you mentioned something. You said when it comes to company culture, we continually have to be reinventing ourselves, right? Do you feel like that's also true as an individual leader?
For sure. I mean, we need to see what's the situation, you know, what our customer asking for us, what is the company asking for us, and what is our employees asking for us, and fit into that picture. So what worked, you know, many years ago doesn't work. And, you know, think only about hierarchy. I mean, in the past, it was much more, you know, there was a hierarchy, and now it's much more flat. People want to go much faster, you know, don't recognize that hierarchy anymore, are more inspired by vision and, you know, kind of want to change things instead of making a ladder, career ladder. So yeah, you need to reinvent yourself and your leadership team. Also, diversity is an important topic. How do we bring in, you know, not only male, female, different cultures, like I mentioned, you know, how do we bring that together? But also different opinions. So if you get a team of only people that think the same are the same, yeah, then you kind of get the same outcome.
Yeah.
So create that diversity, you know, in your team setting. So to answer your question, 100%. You need to stay open and stay close and what's happening around you and adjust to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ralph, when you think about, you know, the future, I know no one can predict the future, but what do you think are the biggest shifts we'll see in the next 1 to 3 years?
Yeah, I think it's more continuation of what we see now, or the world need to, you know, with whatever circumstances that happen. So, but for now, I see that we more go to outcome driven, mm-hmm. that we even more connect ourselves to customer outcomes, that we drive more digitalization in whatever we do. So that is, you know, portals, getting customers, you know, digitally connected, more remote in that way, more software, you know, upgrades, updates via that remote. And so less field work, but more remote, and more, yeah, the outcomes as a service, so that we switch some business models and that we drive more services. So I see things going to services and software, if you will, as a pivot point going forward. I think that's the change we're seeing going forward, which we need to adjust to. Now, then the engagement with the customer, so that as a customer engagement, that we more help the customers, and especially in the healthcare industry, to also transition to their needs. Because, yeah, the customers have, you know, healthcare industry is struggling with aging population, less staff, you know, higher cost. So how do we connect ourselves to these issues and develop services around that that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. After 24 years with Philips, what makes you still excited to come to work? I won't say every day, because we're all human and some days we just, you know, maybe won't be, but most days.
Yeah, first of all, the industry. I think the healthcare industry is a nice industry to work in. And this evolution that there are still every day, every year, it's not that, okay, we're bored. There's always something new that you can put your hands on to make that happen. And in my place, it's also the diversity, you know, with the different cultures that we work with, the different regions, yeah, the different opportunities. So that basically always make me, you know, come to work and never think I'm bored with what we were doing. There's always something to improve still. I thought that would, when I started Philips, I thought, okay, now maybe at a certain moment you plateau, but it doesn't seem like that. So that's makes me every time stay. And of course, the opportunity you get to do all these things and to change that and to put your own thinking in there and the freedom that you can execute that. So it's not a given that comes from the top and say, okay, you need to go here and here, but it's also, we can develop that ourselves in a way. So that's also a nice opportunity for me to be very creative and thinking ahead what we need to do and where we should focus.
Yeah, I think that it sounds really good. I mean, you have, you mentioned being in the healthcare space, and I think that, we talk often about how younger talent especially wants to feel that sense of purpose. And so in the industry you're in, it's really easy to connect what you're doing every day to things that really truly matter and make a really big difference. And, then you're in a, it just sounds like you have such a good mindset about enjoying the process of learning, taking things in, encountering different opinions, different situations, and then to your point, sort of creating from that, and I think that sounds really good.
Yeah, one thing on the future, maybe going back now that we talk, how do we get talent, kind of in this whole game with us? So I can be excited, but how long am I?
How do you get them excited, right?
Yeah, but how do we get the talent following us in that way and get them on that journey also? And I think developing talent, that talent stay, and let them also think about and give them that freedom, which I was talking about. Because they got different needs. Maybe they get being different ways or have different expectations. And I think that's where we also need to be open and work with. So what's the next generation of leaders that we need to get in service?
Yeah. It seems like you have a really good mindset and approach with that, though. Even earlier when you were explaining, that in today's landscape, there's far less of a hierarchy. I think there's this sense of ego that makes that really hard for certain leaders to accept. Because the mentality would be, no, I've been here for 24 years. I know this. I've had this experience. So you listen to me, right? I mean, I'm generalizing. But that, as you stated, that's truly not the way we work today. And it's not just about what the next generation wants in their roles. It's also about the complexity of problems we're trying to solve and the fact that it isn't realistic anymore for someone or someones to be the knowers of all, right? We really have to bring together those different skills, experiences, opinions in order to solve the challenges at hand today. So it seems like you have a really good mindset of being open to that and, not feeling stuck in exercising authority or, trying to fit people into certain levels or roles, but rather looking at what can we all do together. And I think that is a key to being able to develop those next leaders, because you're not forcing them into a structure that they're not going to be comfortable in. You're sort of open to how do we create together? How do we learn from each other? How do we solve these problems together? And I think that it's just a really positive way of looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. I mean,
not at all.
I can say it very nicely, but it's still a challenge to get that working and to listen to these people and to, because you see that, that bridge between the older generation and the newer generation. How do you keep those two together?
Yeah. And I think, it's a good point that it's not easy. I remember an interview I did a while back with a woman in Copenhagen who leads a logistics company, Trina. And she said it's very humbling. It's leadership today is very humbling because it's not the way it used to be. And you really have to reconcile that, it just requires a different mindset and a different level of acceptance. So it's not easy, but I think as long as you're open to it, right, and you're not closed off to, that's where so many people get stuck, I think, today is they're really yearning for the way it always was, rather than being open to, okay, so what are today's criteria and how do I reconcile that? It doesn't have to be easy. You don't have to like all of it, right? But when you can just keep your mind open instead of closing yourself off, I think it just, really helps not only maintain relevance, but, give yourself the opportunity to build that future talent pool and to, you know, set things up well. So last question, Ralph, you know, is just, I can imagine you have so many and it's probably going to be hard to narrow it down. But if you just sort of think about, you know, your career journey so far, what would you say is the biggest lesson or lessons that you've learned as a leader?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I would say, in a teamwork is dream work, if you will. So you cannot do it alone. So you need to work with a team, but also have a vision and a shared, you know, direction where you want to go. I think maybe I came with this illusion in the company, you know, or from school that you say, okay, now I'm, you know, highly educated. I know the stuff, you know, I can do stuff and, you know, I can bring that. But at the end, it's people work and, you know, that's somehow that you need to work together. And I think that's the most rewarding. If you achieve something with a team, set out what you want to do and achieve that. And I think that gives also a great feeling of, yeah, recognition and, you know, colorful into people's mind. If you talk to people, you know, over the years, so what was a good thing or, you know, that what we achieved there, what we did there. I think that's the biggest learning in making it work. And of course, you go into this habit of, you know, give me this and I will run with it and I will fix it. But, you know, to step back, to inspire, to take people along the journey, I think, yeah, for me, that's the biggest learning that pops into my mind right now. Maybe there are many others, but I would say that's the biggest learning.
Yeah, I love it. Ralph, thank you so much for coming and talking with me and sharing your insights and experiences. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ellen.
You can find more by visiting the home of the Unscripted podcast at futureoffieldservice.com. You can also find the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, any others. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. The Unscripted podcast is published in partnership with IFS. You can learn more at ifs.com. As always, thank you for listening.